Okay, Bezus Hashem, today we will be discussing various recent shilas that have a lot to do with the sugyas at the end of the third parak of Chulin, Elul Treifus. And first a disclaimer, I'm not an expert, not in the physical mitzias of what I'm going to be discussing, nor am I a pesik, so this should not be relied upon for halacha l'maaso. The svaras I will be presenting, none of them are my own. This is meant to be an overview of the very complicated halachic issues that we'll be discussing, and everyone should ask their own Rav how their Rav paskins. Now, to begin with, we'll discuss the sugya on Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, and the very last daf in Elul Treifus. And we have a machlekes between Tana de Beir Rav and Tana de Beir Bishmuel. Tana de Beir Rav derives it from a klal pratu klal. Tana de Beir Bishmuel derives the following from Riboy Miyat V'Riboy. According to Rashi, there's no difference between them. Taisus has a slight difference, but everybody agrees that that which the Torah requires, that marine animals, water creatures, have fins and scales, is applicable to yamim and cholim, that is to say, ponds, seas, rivers, as well as that which is similar to the yamim and cholim in two respects, ne'itzim and charitzim, that is to say, trenches that water flows through, and ponds that have an inlet and an outlet. They're similar in two respects, in that they're in the ground and they flow from an underground source of water. Any marine creatures that originate in any of these bodies of water must have fins and scales. However, boreis, sheikh, and ma'orais, which are various types of underground cisterns, or in-ground cisterns, I should say, that they hold water, but water does not flow through them or bubble up beneath them, and certainly kalim, that is to say, waters in vessels that are above ground, any marine creatures that originate in these are going to be mutter no matter what, even without fins and scales. That is the maskon of the Gemara. Now, as hakdomo to the issues we'll be discussing today, it's very clear from this Gemara and others that the simple understanding of the Gemara is that we're talking about spontaneous generation, that the various creatures and insects and other marine life is meant to come from the water, as the Gemara says clearly in a number of places, that the yoytze min ha'tomei tomei, if it comes from a male and a female parents, and the parents are tomeim, it's also tomei. And there's various ways to approach these sugis in light of, since the 17th century, Louis Pasteur proved to the satisfaction of the scientific community that spontaneous generation does not exist. How are we meant to reconcile these Gemaras with scientific understanding? So there are three basic approaches amongst the Poskim. The first approach is that of Rav Moshe Feinstein, we'll call it, in Tav Shin Lamed Ches, approximately 31 years ago, 1978. Rav Shlomo Gross, the author of the Mishnah Shlomo, approached Rav Moshe Feinstein with a shaila regarding sable, a type of kosher fish, and there were worms in the fish. And the shaila was that Chazal say, as we'll get into greater detail in the second half of this year, that any worms in the flesh of fish are mutter, they can be eaten, because they come from the fish. Science says there's no such thing as worms from the fish, they come from the water, and they're bred by other insects and other worms. Rav Moshe told him, Chazal say that they come from the fish, we don't have to worry about reconciling the halacha to the science, we can rely on the Gemara. The Gemara, the halacha says they come from the fish, who cares what the scientists say? So that's one approach. An opposite approach is hinted to in the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish in Hilchos Teiloim, Perek Yud Dalid, the beginning there. He seems to entertain a notion as follows, that although it's true that spontaneous generation exists, as Chazal tell us, anything which scientists have shown is not produced through spontaneous generation, but rather it comes from parents that are similar to it, that is not part of the set of spontaneous generation. In the technical terms, we'd say that as far as we know, it's an empty set. We don't know of any scientifically proven spontaneous generation, even though it can exist. And therefore, the Chazon Ish doesn't say it absolutely clearly, but he at the very least says that there's a reason to be machmir and not eat anything which science shows comes from parents that are the same type of insect. Okay, so according to the Chazon Ish, it would seem, he doesn't say this clearly, and it would seem to be a big chiddush, that the entire Simon Pei Dalid in Shulchan Aruch Yerdeya, which discusses Hilchos Teiloim, since nowadays we can show and demonstrate that all of these various Teiloim in fish and fruit and vegetables, etc., they don't come from a spontaneous generation, it would seem that none of the halachas are applicable. As a general rule, chaznish is the chaznish, but as far as I understand and see, most paiskim do not take this chaznish into account. They seem to take the Shulchan Aruch at face value. That's the opposite approach. The in-between approach, I don't know if he originated the Svara, but I do know that of Pesach Eliyahu Falk in England approximately 20 years ago suggested that if the insect entered the fish or the fruit or the vegetable, whatever's under discussion, in a form that's not near Elei Naim, it's too small to see, and then it only reached the size and the stage that one can see it with the naked eye afterwards, that is what Chazal mean. They talk about coming from the fish, coming from the fruit, and it's not a steer at all. It doesn't seem to be what the words in the various Gemaras actually mean to say, but this Svara and a similar one that was advanced by Rav Yosef Mordechai Zilber, he said when the eggs, maybe when the insects, not the insects themselves, but the eggs are laid in the fish, this Svara was presented to Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbuch, Yankee Misa Fisher, Zatzal, and Nissan Karelitz. Most of these Gedolim of Eretz Yisrael liked the Svara, agreed with it. Rav Yoshev did not hold the Svara, although he still mattered the worms in the sable, and the Shilat was presented to Rav Moshe Feinstein for other reasons. And this is a way of reconciling the science of the Halacha. Now this raises a lot of questions, this approach. Because according to this approach, we have to understand when are Tayloim Mutter, as we'll see soon, as we see from the Gemara, we'll see from the Shulchan Aruch, that number of worms are mutaris. So which way do we look at it? Do we say that we assume they're all mutaris because they were too small to be seen by the naked eye when they entered the fish or the fruit, unless it's proven otherwise? Or do we take the more machmir approach? Do we say that we must prove that they were invisible to the naked eye when they entered the fish or the fruit in order to say it's mutar? Okay, well, Bezus Hashem, get back to that. This is an overview of the various approaches. Okay, now, the first specific shiloh we'll discuss is, it's an interesting story, happened about 7 years ago, 2004, in which, in New York, there was imported lettuce from Eretz Yisrael that was packaged and sold as bug-free. And after inspecting the lettuce, they realized there were these white flecks on the lettuce leaves, and it turns out that they were bugs. And an investigation was undertaken to understand how could there be bugs on the bug-free lettuce. And it turned out that the bug-free lettuce came with instructions it should be washed off. There might be large bugs such as flies stuck to the leaves. And it was the water that had these bugs in them. That's how they ended up in the lettuce leaves from New York. What kind of bugs were they? They're known as copepods. They're tiny crustaceans related to shrimp and lobster, only much smaller. And these crustaceans, story turns out was as follows. Most places in the United States, there are strict filtering requirements. And these filtering requirements filter out these copepods, and they're not found in the water. However, New York has especially high quality water. Much of it comes from the Catskills in upstate New York, and similar systems exist in Boston and Seattle. The water is of such high quality that the regulations do not require that they're filtered to the point that these copepods are removed. Now, the water is chlorinated, and the chlorine certainly kills the copepods, which will be significant later in our discussion. They are dead, but they are there. So the shaila arose, are these crustaceans a problem halachically? Must one avoid water in New York without a filtration system? So in order to begin discussing the shaila, we have to understand a little bit, gets very technical, but a little bit of where does the water in New York come from? Upon further investigation, turns out that Brooklyn, which is the highest concentration of Formida in New York, had the biggest problem. Now, the Kensico Reservoir is a huge body of water. It's mostly man-made, as we'll see. And this is where most of the water comes from. It often passes through the Hillview Reservoir. And then the question, after knowing the water comes from here, is where did the copepods come from? And many so-called experts, again, I don't know their qualifications, but they maintain that these copepods are very flimsy creatures. There's no way they would survive coming in from an outside system, the various rivers that feed these reservoirs. They must be breeding and developing somewhere in the grand system of the reservoirs and the aqueducts that bring the water into the heavily populated areas. And the truth is, if you go to the ocean, the rivers, and you take a pail and you try to catch copas, you'll come up with none. And there's no way to do it. So it would seem to support this theory that they only develop in the systems. And there were those who wanted to matter to begin with by saying the entire system of the reservoirs and the aqueducts taken all together with the tons of millions of cubic feet of water is all one big kli, or at least a bor. And therefore, these kopads should not pose any problem, because since they develop in a bor, and the bor is no inlet or outlet, it's a self-contained system, therefore they're going to be mutter. And Rav Belsky, I don't know if he's still old to this, but at the time, I know he advanced to Svaro, that the Hillview Reservoir, which was the last stop for the water, where they might be developing there, it had a system of doors and gates that there was human control over, and they could close it up, and therefore it didn't have the status of Neitzim, or Yamim and Necholim, and it should be Motem. Now, assuming that this is true, and this would be a Heter, there are still problems, still halachic discussions that must be undertaken to know if this would be okay or not. As far as drinking the water, it would seem that it would be a good heter. As the Gemara says, one can bend down and drink from a bar even at night and not worry about any animals that have no fins and scales. But when it comes to cooking and baking with the water, the shaila would be, there's two steps to the shaila. As we mentioned before, the animals are dead. These crustaceans, these copads, are dead when they come through the faucet. And there's a machlekes harishonim. The Gemara asks on Samach Zayin Amud Beis in Chulin about worms in fruit. And the question of the Gemara is, if they fall out of the fruit when they are dead, is that called a sheretz ala oretz? The only heter to eat the worms in the water or the worms in the fruit is that they didn't develop on the earth. And the Torah says, "Hasheretz hasheretz al oretz." If it crawls around on the earth, creeps around on the earth, then it's aser. What about if it's dead? It's not doing any creeping. On the other hand, it's a type of sheretz that would do creeping were it only alive. And there's many shittos on all sides, but we'll call it the machlekes Rosh and Rambam. The Rosh says that if it comes out dead, it would be mutter. The Rambam says it's aser. Now there's discussion amongst Achrayim, how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. In Yerdeh Pei Dalid, Simen Pei Dalid, Sif Dalid, there it is, he says that if they come out when they're dead, then they're mutter. Then he continues and says, V'yesh oyesrim afilo meis b'seich apriya pir shachakach. Some say it's aser. So he brings the Rosh, it's mutter. Some say that's the Rambam, that it's Osir. And there's a klal, the Shach speaks out, there's a klal that when the Shulchan Aruch paskins one way, and then he says Yesh Ayimim the other way, he really means to paskin like the first opinion that he brings. What complicates matters is that the Beis Yosef, that's of course the Shulchan Aruch himself in his commentary on the Torah, he brings the Rosh and then says, but the Rambam says otherwise. There the implication is that he seems to favor the Rambam. So this is a machlekes. We show him, Shulchan Aruch brings both days, it's not clear how he paskins, but the Shach unequivocally states that if they come out dead, then it would be okay. The other shaila here is that the Gemara tells us, Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, that if these shrotzim climb on the sides of a bor, in the bor where they develop, climbs up the sides and goes back into the water, that's not considered sheretz al oretz. That would still be mutter. Why is that? Because hainu revise, the sides of the bor, since it's normal for the shrotzim to climb up and down and go in and out, that's part of where they've developed. And since the area that they develop is a bor, there's no inlet and outlet, therefore it's going to be mutter. The shaila now is, if these copads are in water that one is cooking or baking with, must one be concerned that the copads will end up on the sides of the pot and then fall back in? And this is a machlekes Shach and Taz. The Shach is in Simen Beis, and Sif Beis, sorry, and the Taz is in Sif Gimel. And the Shach, not going into all the details, the Shach maintains that which is called Haina Revise is only true within the bor that these Togim Tveim originated. But if it's taken into a different kli, Once it leaves the water and goes to the sides of the kli, then it's aser. That's no longer called revise. The Taz disagrees. The Taz says, that's okay, that's mutter. It's mutter even in the second kli, if it goes on the side and goes back into the water. So we have a couple shilas. The klipots are dead. Do we have to worry when cooking or baking that they end up on the side of the pot? On the one hand, we have machlekes shach and taz, whether or not that's called revise. We also have the shach who says that the Shulchan Aruch prefers the opinion of the Rosh, and the Rosh says that since they're dead, we don't have to worry about it anyway. So here there'd be a mokim lahatir, either because they were dead when they came out of the water to begin with, or because, like the shach says, on the sides of kelim, even even in the secondary kelim, then they're going to be mutter. Now those who say that mamor of shach, if you want to say that it's a problematic because of the shach who says that on the side of the secondary kli, that's not revise. The shach l'shitoso is the one who says that the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rosh, that since it's dead when it comes out, it's mutter anyway. So whichever way you look, this wouldn't be a problem either. So according to everything we've presented thus far, it would seem that there should be a heter and one shouldn't have to worry about these kopads. However, it's not so simple. Here of Yosef David Lack, who was the author of Chulin Illuminated, Timunei Chol, those who use that sefer might be familiar with him, works for the OU. He did a tremendous amount of research in this area, both in terms of the scientific facts and the halacha. And he spoke to the foremost kopad experts and determined the following. First of all, regarding kopads, they are found in every ocean, river, and lake in the world. They don't develop in the reservoirs. So why is it that if a person tries to catch them in an ocean, river, or lake, he'll never come up with a kopad? Because they hang around the bottom, they easily swim away, they avoid capture. You can't pick one up with a bucket. However, the modern aqueduct systems, they have powerful suction, they suck in water in great volume, and the kopads can't escape. And that's why they're found in the reservoirs, they're killed by the chlorine, they can't swim away, that's how they enter in the houses. Which means that they develop outside of the reservoir. And the truth is that there's another factor, which is that the Kensico Reservoir is not completely man-made. There is a lake called Lake Rye. It's only 2% of the volume of what is currently the Kensico Reservoir. However, it's still there, somewhere in the middle. And that is fed by underground springs. Furthermore, the Delaware River system, as well as other river systems, do feed into the Kensico Reservoir. And now, about 30% of the water comes from underground springs. 70% is from rainwater. There are those who wanted to matter based on Roiv, that since most of the water in the system is not from Yamim and Necholim, that should be another Sibo, another reason to make it Mutter. Rav Lack maintains that if one would suggest such a thing, the scientists say this is true for all bodies of water in the entire world. They're all only about 30% fed by underground springs and 70% rainwater, which would mean that, again, the entire Hilchos Teiloyim in Shulchan Aruch is no longer applicable, because Al Pi Roiv, it would all be mutter, and there's no such thing as something usher. So that would seem to be a strong svar to say that we don't base it on Roiv. Furthermore, when it comes to the actual systems themselves, there is no real control. The gates in the Hillview Reservoir, besides the fact that the water doesn't always go through the Hillview Reservoir, there are gates that remain always open. They're never completely closed. So there are very strong svaris presented that it's not true. The kopads are certainly originating from Yamim and Cholim, bodies of water that flow from a source, and therefore this is not a good way to say that it's mutter. There are, however, other possible svaris in order to permit these crustaceans. And the first of them is bittul. Okay? Let's say that they're very tiny. The fact is that they're translucent. When they're alive, they're not that hard to spot, even though they're very, very small. They're up to 1.5 millimeters, but they're easily visible to the naked eye as they swim around. When dead, then translucent, they're much harder to see. But It takes a trained eye. Somebody who's looking for them and knows what to look for, he will see them. They look like little white specks. Now, is there bittul? And this gets into a lot of sugyas that we're not going to enter, such as niyata motzoi, niyata enoi motzoi. But assuming that there's less than 1 in 60, can we say bittul? So the first issue that comes to mind is the issue of Beria. And that's a Sugya and Chulin coming up on Daf Kuf. And there's this question of that which Beria, which means an entire creature. There's no such thing as bitl for an entire creature. Is that Derais? Is it Derabonon? So Taisus there. But either way, at least mit Derabonon, a whole creature is not bottle. However, there are svaras to say that this is not an issue with the Kopats. First of all, some of the copads are not completely there. They're what's scientifically termed ghosts, which means that they're just the exoskeletons. When it comes to crustaceans, think of a lobster or a shrimp, the bones are on the outside, and because the chlorine killed them, all of the inner organs leached out, and it's just the bones of the shrotim, which, at the very least, is not a burial. Okay? Some of them, at the very least, are like that. Furthermore, in their journey through the entire aqueduct system, through the faucets, they're battered, they often lose antenna, they lose legs, which would mean that they're not complete, and if they're not complete, they're not a beria. Furthermore, many Paiskim say that a sheretz is not choshuv. A sheretz is not something which is significant enough to have the status of a beria. It's another reason to say that it would be bottle. So for these reasons, it could be that beria is not a reason to say that it's not bottle. The other problem, however, is that the Poskim speak out, it's a Taz here in Peidalid, that if it's near le'inayim, if it's visible to the naked eye, then it's not bottle. Leaving aside the issue of a beria, of an entire complete creature, it's visible to the naked eye. Now, this also is not so simple. There's a Darchei Tshuva here in Simen Peidalid, in Ismen Hei. And he talks about insects that one can only see in a clear glass held up to the sun. And one can make a case, they're not near le'inayim, because similar to that which is not visible to the naked eye, you have to look under a microscope. You don't call that near le'inayim, even though you can see it with an aid of a microscope. That which you need the sun through a clear glass of water, that's also not near le'inayim. The Shai Tshuva rejects this svara. He says that is called near le'inayim. It mentioned that if the eye is trained to look for these copads, it can find them. Specifically, if you look at a filter that filters them out, it's very easy to see them. The question now turns to, they can be seen, but are they readily recognizable as crustaceans? Or they just look like specks? And this is a shiloh that the place can deal with when talking about scale insects. On citrus fruits, there are little, they look like little scales. They're little dots or teardrop shaped, and they can be scraped off. And we know that they're bugs, but they don't look like bugs. They look like nothing like bugs until you look at them under a microscope. And there were a number of Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach among them, who wanted to say that although it's true that you can see them, but if you can't see that it's a bug with the naked eye, then that is not called Nir Le'inayim. Now there's a Chazan Ish, which discusses a different shiloh, which we'll tie in a moment. Chaznish asks regarding earlier in the perek, Elu Trefis. There are many things the Gemara says an animal cannot survive, and yet we know, at least current medical knowledge, that the animal can survive them. So the Chaznish was asked to discuss this, and he said that there's 2,000 years of Torah. The Gemara says that there's 2,000 years of Toyu, of nothingness, then 2,000 years of Torah, then 2,000 years of Mashiach. Chaznish said, what medical knowledge was able to do during the 2,000 years of Torah, that's what determines what is and is not a trefa. So based on this, one could suggest that before the microscope was developed, what a person could recognize as a bug is a bug, and what a person can see but not see is a bug is going to be mutter. Although, if one looks very closely, you can see perhaps antenna or legs, it's not so clear that it's a crustacean as opposed to a speck. However, the Chazan Ish himself rejected this for him. Chaznish said that if you know it's a bug, even based on the microscopic evidence, and you can see it with your naked eye, that is osir. And apparently, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach rejected this svara when he heard that the Chaznish rejected it. And therefore, this, because they're up to 1.5 millimeters, they're easily visible by the naked eye. It seems to be that this is a reason why they should not be bottle. Furthermore, there's a svara in the Paiskim that even if something is bottle, but it's possible to remove it, then lechatchila, it's aser to rely on bittul. It's another reason not to rely on bittul. And therefore, Rabbi Yoshiv and Rav David Feinstein, Shlita, came out, they issued a joint psak that It's usher to drink all the water in New York. It's a couple of years ago already. And many people are makpid. Again, I'm not paskening. There may still be Choshe Rabban who disagree. Interestingly enough, there's a filter company in Texas that, when the story broke, reported a 500 times growth in their filter sales, all to New York. And it was not only Yidden, they were interviewed. The first one to break this story, one of the first, was the New York Times. There's a big story around the New York Times, a couple of them. And apparently it wasn't only the Jews who were bothered by the concept of drinking crustaceans. And there were many non-Jews in New York who also placed their orders for these filter systems. And nowadays you can find many restaurants and many chasna holes who advertise that they have strict filtration systems. Some of them cost up to $1,500. And it's based on, these are not all of the source, but this is an overview of some of the issues in this particular question. Okay, now let's turn our attention to the second half of the shir, and this is the sugya on Samach Zayin Amud Beis in Chulin. The Gemara discusses two types of parasites. The first type is a kukiani, and it's a worm that we're told infests the lung and the liver of, well, we're not told what. Rashi says it means animals. And then we discuss darni, or some agaris murno, and this is a fish parasite that infests fish. And regarding the fish parasite, originally, well, the Gemara says clearly there's a big difference. This darni, doesn't infest only fish, it infests also animals. But the worm that infests animals is usur, whereas that infests the fish is mutter. And Rav Meshach Shebreider of Ada Acha asks Ravino, what's the difference? And Ravina explained that the worms that are found in the flesh of the various animals have the status of that animal flesh, even though they're not the animals themselves. And therefore, an animal that requires shchita, the worm is not shechted, and therefore the worm remains usur because it's akin to aver min achai. It's part of the cow, but it wasn't shechted. Whereas the fish do not require shchita, and therefore that's going to be mutter, what's found in the flesh of the fish. Now, when it came to kukiani earlier in the Gemara, there, Rav Ashi assumed the whole time that it was mutter, and there's different gersoyes. Rav Sheshes Breid Rav Idi said it was usur. Rav Shish Breid Rav Idi said it was mutter. And the reason was that it can't be that the animal ingested them. If the animal did ingest them, then they would be usur, because they were sheretz ala oretz before they entered the animal system. But we don't find that the animal excretes them. Many Rishonim understand that if they went through the digestive process, they'd be broken down. Other Rishonim say, no, they'd be alive, but they don't come out in the excrement. Therefore, it must be that they weren't ingested. However, the Gemara says the halacha is, the kukiani is usur. Why is that? Because when the animal sleeps, they enter through the nostrils, and they climb down through the trachea and make their way from there into the lungs and the liver. Now, Tosis asks on Rashi that if we're talking about worms in the lung, the liver, and animals, then what about the next braisa? Talks about there's a difference between the animals and the fish. The worms and the animals are usur. What was Rav Ashi thinking? What was Rav Shisha Breid Rav Ida thinking when they said they were mutter? It's Eber Menachai. Therefore, most Rishonim learn, unlike Rashi, that the discussion of kukiani is a fish parasite, and it enters the nostrils of the fish when the fish is sleeping. Tiferes Yankiv gives an answer for Rashi. He says that there's a difference between parasites found within the flesh and parasites found between the skin and the flesh. That's what Rashi says. Rashi says that the darni, which is the second discussion, are worms found bein or labosar. And there, it might be more mutter because, or rather, it might be more usur, it came from the outside. But one thing we see, and the Shulchan Aruch passes this very clearly, in Simen Pei Dalid Sif Tez Zayin, Hilchos Toiloyim, Kol Toiloyim Anintzoyim Bebehemo, if these parasites are found in an animal, Bein Sheim, Bein Or Labosar, Bein Sheim Bimeil, whether they're found between the skin and the flesh, meaning just under the skin, it sounds like you can peel the skin away and there they are, or whether they're deep within the flesh or even in the stomach, makes no difference, Asurim. If they're in the stomach, we assume that the animal ingested them, but, and they're certainly going to be usur. Even in the flesh, they didn't have shchita. Vanimtsoim bedogim, says the Shulchan Aruch, if they're found in fish, bimeim asurim. If they're in the stomach, then it's usur, because we assume the fish ingested it, and it was sheretz Aloretz. It came from, assuming the fish are in Yamim and Acholim, and the worm came from Yamim and Acholim, and therefore without fins and scales, it's Osir. Bein or Labosar, or Besoich Abosar Mutarin. But whether they're between the skin and the flesh, or whether they're in the middle of the flesh, then they will be Mutar. That is what the Shulchan Aruch says. Seems to be very straightforward. Now, there's a number of parasites that infest fish. What we're going to discuss now is the Anisakis worm. It's a round worm. It's shaped like a spiral. It's found in quite a number of fish. And this is what currently accepted scientific and medical knowledge has to say about the Anisakis parasite. His life cycle works as follows. The eggs hatch on the ocean floor. The larva is consumed by very small crustaceans, shrimp-like creatures, which are then eaten by fish or other larger, slightly larger animals. And after the larva hatches in the shrimp that consume the larva get a bit bigger, then the larger animals, such as salmon, cod, flounder, all these are kosher types of fish, when they consume the smaller crustaceans, then the larva of the Anisakis parasite gets that much larger. Then these fish are consumed by mammals, either dolphins, whales, or seals. It's in the mammals that the Anisakis reaches maturity. In the intestines, they breed, they mate, they lay eggs, which are then excreted by the mammals, fall to the ocean floor, and the life cycle begins again. This is absolutely accepted by the scientific community as things stand. Now, what's interesting is that this has made the news a lot more recently, because since the Japanese style of sushi, which includes raw fish, has become popular throughout the world, humans ingest these Anisakis larvae. Now, for the Anisakis larvae, humans are a dead end, because their eggs will never end up on the ocean floor. However, the stomachs of the humans are biologically similar enough to those of the aquatic mammals that these infestations can sometimes cause blockages in the intestines, and therefore there's been a lot of medical literature in relatively recent history regarding this Anisakis parasite. This is called Anisakiasis, is the name of the condition that the human can suffer from this this worm. Now, in this Anisakis worm is found primarily in the stomachs of fish, kosher fish. This is where the shaila begins. Getting back to our Hakdomo, according to the Chazan Ish, which again is not often, if ever, brought lahalacha, it certainly should be also, because science says that it's not spontaneously generated. It has parents that are also, therefore it should be also. Okay, but as I said, most poskim still go with the Shulchan Aruch, the Pashto of the Shulchan Aruch. And therefore, whether we go according to the Svar of Moshe Feinstein, that we ignore science and we look at spontaneous generation, or even if we go with the Svar of the other Matirim, L'chayro, who say that as long as it wasn't near Leilayim when it was ingested, then that's called the Gemara term as having come from the fish itself. Why should this be any different than what the Shulchan Aruch discusses? He says very clearly that if they're found in the flesh of the fish, then they're mutter, and the stomach is aser. Therefore, the Anisakis worms that are found in the stomach, which is where they are found predominantly in the kosher fish, should be aser. And when and if they're found in the flesh, which happens, they should be mutter. That's what it would seem from the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch with the Gemara. However, it's not so simple. There are many who maintain that this case is different, and things have changed to some degree, and what we have today is not what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about, and it could be that even Rav Moshe would agree that this is a different scenario. And why is that? So, now we have a big discussion. Let's start. First of all, there seems to be strong evidence that these Anisakis parasites emigrate, they migrate from the stomach, that's called the viscera of a fish, that's the innards, from there to the flesh. And the Shulchan Aruch, L'chayro, would not be discussing such a thing, because he says if they're found in the stomach, they came from the outside. They're found in the flesh, they developed in the fish. And if we have evidence to the contrary, that what was ingested by the fish made its way into the flesh, then one could make a case that this is not what the Shulchan Aruch is discussing. Now, what evidence is there for such a claim? So first of all, there's many, many, many of these Anisakis worms found in the stomach. And when they're beyond the stomach, they're predominantly concentrated in what's called the belly flaps of the fish, which are right next to the stomach. and they're almost never found in the tail, which is the farthest from the stomach. So it seems that that's where they're coming from. We already mentioned that it's accepted scientific fact that they are indeed being ingested by the fish through the crustaceans that eat the larva. Now, there are those who maintain that nishtana hateva, that with today's dirtier, more polluted waters, that supports Anisakis parasite more than ever before, and the Shulchan Aruch simply never knew of such a parasite. The Arabanim who suggests such a svara. However, reference has been found to Anisakis worms from 700 years ago. This doesn't seem to be true. As far as the question of Nirlei Naim, in other words, if we would accept the svara of Rav Falk, that many Gedolim accepted, that what size are the Anisakis larvae when they are ingested by the fish? Are they visible to the naked eye or not? So, the Matirim, and there are very, very big names on all sides of this question. From the biggest Matirim is Rav Yisrael Belsky of the OU, and he's explained and expressed his opinion in many times in many different forms of media very clearly. So among his tainus is that it's an exaggeration, those who say that the Anisakis worms are 5 millimeters long. When they enter the fish, they seem to be between 1 and 2 millimeters long. And he says it's not near Leinayim. And the truth is that Rav Yisrael Belsky Shlita maintains that this is a secondary svara. We don't need to come on to this at all. Because Ein Chadosh Tachas HaShomesh, there's nothing new in the world. And it's a parasite that Shulchan Aruch knew full well. Shulchan Aruch does not require us to be experts in parasitology. He doesn't differentiate between any different types of parasites. And the Shulchan Aruch says, if they're found in the flesh, they're mutter, and if they're in the stomach, they're usser. And the discussion begins and ends there. There's nothing to talk about. It certainly seems to be the pashas of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. What about the Oisrim? The Oisrim include most places in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yoshiv, Rav Vosner, Shlita, Rav Moshe Sternbach, Rav Gershon Bess from Los Angeles. So they say that things indeed have changed. Not that the Anisakis necessarily is a brand new type of parasite or that it never infested fish before, but they cite a study off the coast of France in 1960, and there various types of fish were tested for this Anisakis parasite, and 1.5% of the fish were found to be infested. 12 years later, in 1972, the same fish, the same study was conducted, thousands of fish, and this time 60% of the fish were found to be infested, which in 12 years is obviously a rather dramatic jump. What would the reason for this be? So it's been suggested by a number of poskim that about that time there were a lot of wildlife in danger, conservationists that had a lot of laws passed. There's simply many more large mammals in the oceans than there used to be. There's more seals, there's more dolphins, there's more whales, and therefore there's a lot more Anisakis parasites, because these worms require the mammals to complete their life cycle, and therefore things have indeed changed, and now it's a much bigger problem than it used to be. Others explain the following. They say it used to be that when the fishermen would catch the fish, they were working on the assumption here that the worms emigrate from the stomach to the flesh, but the worms don't really want to be in the flesh. They're predominantly found in the stomach. So when do they migrate? Post-mortem, after the death of the fish. Why would they do that? Because nowadays, when the fishermen catch in large amounts, in bulk, so they catch the fish, and then they partially gut the fish, and the Anisakis worms are left with nowhere to go, back into the viscera, so they're forced to tunnel into the flesh of the worms, the flesh of the fish, rather. Okay? And it used to be that women would get the fish fresh from the fishermen, and then they would clean them out very well, or they would freeze them, and the worms don't survive freezing, and they're not going anywhere. And nowadays, they're transported in refrigerated seawater in the holds of ship, and the refrigeration is not enough to kill the fish, and therefore, things have changed. Furthermore, they want to bring rice. There is a worm or a bug of some sort that infests rice. It's discussed at great length by the Shach, the Taz, and many, many other poskim called a milvun. And there are those who want to identify the milvun with a very specific type of parasite, which is 0.2 millimeters long. Very, very short. And it's clear from all the poskim that it's near Leinayim. And the scientists have said that at the very smallest, the Anisakis worm has to be at least 0.23 to 0.3 millimeters long when it enters these fish. And therefore, if the milvun is near Leinayim, certainly the Anisakis fish is near Leinayim. Okay. Furthermore, Rav Gershon Bess from the Oisrim, he suggests that the Shulchan Aruch is not talking about the Nesachus Ram at all, because it wasn't that Motsoi, but rather he was talking about heterophys, might be pronouncing that incorrectly, but it's a type of worm which is only 0.1 millimeter. It's taka not near leinayim. Furthermore, it enters the fish not through the viscera but through the flesh. It burrows in from the outside. And he brings a raya from the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch, who talks about parasites that are bein or lebosar. He says bein shein bein or lebosar, bein shein meo. Whether they are in between, bein or lebosar or b'soicha bosar. Whether they're between the flesh and the skin, or in the skin itself. What direction does it sound like they're coming from? Sounds like they're coming first into the skin and they haven't burrowed into the flesh, or even if they've burrowed into the flesh. So we're not talking about Nanosacchus, which is coming from the opposite direction. Rather, we're talking about this other type of parasite that burrows in from the outside. And therefore, this is a different discussion, and it's clearly also because it comes from outside the fish. Now, the Matirim, such as Rav Belsky, they say it's not true. They, first of all, they maintain the milvon. Who says the milvon is this type of parasite which is so small? Poskim from all over the world discuss the milvon, and it doesn't seem likely that they're all talking about the same parasite. It could be a generic term for any parasite that infests rice. It's not a raya that something which is 0.2 millimeters is necessarily nearly a nine. Furthermore, there's gemaras that talk about people buying fish up to 2 or 3 days after the fishermen caught it, so there's no smach to say that women clean them right away. Furthermore, the Matirim say that when the Shulchan Aruch continues and says the following, that which the fish, the worms, the fish, and the viscera is also only when it's alive. But even in animals, if they infest the animal after its death, or even in fish, then it's going to be mutter, as long as they've not come out, because these parasites, these worms, they developed inside a host, they were never sheretz ala oretz. Says Rebelsky, where'd they come from? Again, Rebelsky is accepting the scientific fact that's accepted nowadays, there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. They must have come from the viscera, must have come from the stomachs. And yet the Shulchan Aruch says it's mutter. Why would it be mutter? It came from the outside. So Rebelsky has a big chiddush, and it all is dependent upon how we read the following Rashi. The Gemara says in Samach Zayin Amud Beis, the words minei gavle, and this is written regarding the fish itself. We mentioned that Rav Meshashia, Reder of Achi Esravino, what's the difference between the worms in the animals and the worms in the fish? And he said, sorry, it's a little bit higher up. I apologize. It's in the discussion of the Kukiani that that term is first used. That Rav Shisha Breder of Idi, according to the second Lashon of the Gemara, says that the Kukiani are mutter. And again, most Paiskim on like Rashi learn it's talking about the fish parasites. My taimo mine gavli. Rashi's goes mino gavli. What does gavli mean? Rashi says Lashon gadli. They grow in it. And then Rashi says these words. Min ha-behemo atzmo hein gedelin. What do these words mean? Rav Belsky maintains it means they grow bigger in the animal. And therefore we don't really care what size the parasite is when it infests the animal. We only worry that it came from the outside and it's a sheretz ala oretz if it remains the same size and doesn't grow any larger in the host. But if it grows any larger, that's enough to make it halachically considered to be part of the host, and therefore it's mutter in the case of a fish. Whereas the Oysim say, no. What it means when Abahema Atzmin Gedelin is that they originate in the flesh of the fish. Either they were too small to be seen by the naked eye before they were in the flesh, or they hatched from eggs in the flesh, but otherwise it's going to be usur. So we have a very, very big machlokes as to what the definition of Minei Gavli is, and that's the source of the heter. Now there's a very choshev yid, a rov by the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Revach, and he is the head of the Machon LeMitzvos HaTluyos BaOretz. It's in Beit Uziel, that's a moshav, and they have their state-of-the-art scientific equipment and an oitzer with all of these sfarim, Nageit LaHalacha, and they there perform experiments. He's a big bucky in both areas of Halacha, and certainly when it comes to fish, he is more experienced than many fishermen. And he has conducted many experiments. He's pulled Anisakis larva out of fish flesh, and he says that he has found tunnels going from the viscera to the fish flesh. Again, Rav Belsky wouldn't necessarily be bothered by this, but he claims that he has evidence that the fish indeed migrate from the viscera to the flesh. The truth is that this entire claim of post-mortem migration, that after death the worms go from the viscera to the flesh, is not at all simple, because the scientists disagree about it. For example, the CDC, which is the Center for Disease Control, states unequivocally that after death, the Anisakis larvae make their way from the fish guts, the viscera, into the flesh. He stated as a fact. However, other studies that have been published about Alaskan wild salmon, for example, say that they've tested many, many, many different samples, and they found absolutely no difference between before death and after death. There's many Anisakis in the viscera, and there's many in the belly flaps, and there's many in the flesh of the fish, and they found even in the tail, and there's absolutely no difference even when they're alive. And there's certainly at least some that are found this way, everybody agrees. And there is a study, supposedly, that says that there were thousands, tens of thousands perhaps, fish that were caught and frozen immediately, and they were tested after being frozen for Anisakis in the flesh, and they found not a single one. The same exact fish, 10 of them were left unfrozen, they were left a couple days, and they came back and 9 out of 10 had Anisakis in the flesh. However, this is a study which is quoted, it's not so clear what the controls were and how it was conducted. So there seems to be a tremendous machlekes in the metzias of what are the facts on the ground. Does the Anisakis indeed migrate from the viscera to the flesh? And if it does it do it when the fish is alive? Does it do it only after the fish is dead? The scientists disagree. Paiskim disagree. Some Paiskim say the scientists themselves can't come to a conclusion. They're not exactly sure where it comes from and when. So we see Rav Moshe's svara that the Gemara refers to what seems to be spontaneous generation. Therefore, Ein lanu elo ma shekosov v'Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says anything found in the flesh is mutter. The Ayesim, of course, say that this is different. And one last point, even according to the Matirim, who say that it's mutter, there is a problem with canned fish, because canned fish is cooked first, and when it's put in the water, there's a concern that the worms will leave the fish, go into the water, and come back inside of the fish before they're cooked. Once they leave and come back inside, according to the Taz and those who say that it's not called Hainu Revise, that's not the area that the fish developed, now they could taka be osur even if they weren't before. The Eitzah here would be to preheat the water and cook the water before placing the fish inside. That way the fish die right away, or even if they come out and die, but they're nice and tamah fugam and they can't go back into the fish. The bottom line is as follows. Anisakis worms do not infest fish in every body of water in the world. There are some oceans and rivers that they're found in great numbers, and some that they are not. And therefore, as a general rule, most Paiskim in Eretz Yisrael, with a couple of exceptions, Rav Moshe Vaya, a famed bug expert, he doesn't feel there's a problem with these Anisakis worms. But most Paiskim, as I mentioned before, Rabbi Yoshiv and Rav Vosner and Rav Moshe Sternbach, feel it's a problem. And therefore one must purchase fish with a hechsher that says where the fish came from. And it must only come from places where the Anisakis are known not to infest them. It's very hard. They can be removed, but every single fish must be inspected under a light box, and the worms must be pulled out. Otherwise, buy them from the areas which the infestation is not found. Most Paiskim in Chutz La'aretz, such as Rav Falk in England, and Rav Yisrael Belsky in America, or Shlomo Miller in Toronto and Lakewood, permit it. They say, Shulchan Aruch says that worms found in fish flesh is not a problem. Nothing has changed significantly. There's not enough evidence to say that this is different. An exception to this would be Rav Gershon Bess in L.A. I mentioned that he is the Asers. I believe the Star K in Baltimore also treats this stringently. And the bottom line is that there's very, very big dilemma on both sides of this issue, as we said, perhaps regarding the kopads in New York, and everyone should ask their own Rav for a practical halachic ruling.